south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, it's a funny thing. People send me emails, talk to me, call me, I do consults, and they say, Johnny, how do you get these good real estate deals you're talking about? How can I get some of that action too? Sure, they hear me talking about this huge real estate bubble that's cracking around the edges and that desperate buyers are coming out to work. But as they check on the internet, always on English language websites, of course, they don't see any really great prices here in Latin America. And you know what? I don't either. Not on the internet. Well, guess what? You have to get boots on the ground. If you do and you plan your trip right, you will find some really great deals. Then again, why take the word of some guy like me blathering away in the ether? Well, for a second opinion and some real tangible proof, I'm going to read you this little email now. Just came in from a loyal listener who's had boots on the ground here, mostly in Guatemala, looking for land. And he's tromping around what I call, and what many call, the most beautiful lake in the world, Lake Atitlan. And what's so special about that area? Well, it's like this. Now, as for me, if I wanted to take a year or two and write the great un-American novel, that's exactly the place I'd move to. I'd get a little house up the mountainside overlooking the lake and have one of the most beautiful, peaceful existences I guess a person could have. But the thing is, only by exploring will you see the little eclectic cabins and homesteads, though you'll only see the obvious ones because most of them are so tucked away you couldn't find them with a drone. And only with boots on the ground will you see how really laid back and inexpensive it is to live there. All right. You're thinking, Johnny, what's so special about a lake? When it comes right down to it, a lake's a lake, right? Well, not quite. It's a lake that's 5,000 feet above sea level that was created and lies on the base of three dormant volcanoes. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. You've got a lake nearby that's so beautiful, right? Everybody's got in their mind's eye a picture of what they think is the most beautiful lake, and it's usually in their own state. You know, childhood vacation memories of camping and skiing with mom and dad and drunken Uncle Louie and all that. Well, I'll tell you this. By worldwide travel writer consensus, there are two lakes that are hands down considered to be the most spectacular and beautiful in the world. One is Lake Como in Italy. The other, yep, Lake Atitlan in Guatemala. However, you can search all day on the internet, read all the blogs, download photos and YouTubes, but still you'll never come close to the essence of what the place is really like. So why am I talking about this? Hey, I'm not trying to promote the place. In fact, I'd rather you not go there. What, and have gringo tourists turn it into another Disneyland? No way. Why mention it then? Well, not only because people ask me all the time, what's your plan C, Johnny, if you had decided to change base locations now and go somewhere else? Well, that would be my plan C. Yep, it is way out in the boonies, 3 or 4 hours by car from Guatemala City and the International Airport. But still, like most places in Latin America, it has good internet connections. And there are enough small towns around where you can get most anything you need. To give you an idea, I'd say you're at least a half an hour drive from the nearest Walmart, which, depending on your disposition, is a good and a bad thing. Now, let me repeat this. I'm not trying to make this an advertisement for you to come down to Lake Atitlan and buy land or rent or whatever. In fact, I don't want you to come down. So far, they get their share of tourists, but they're eco, green hugger type tourists. Believe me, the last thing we want to see is Costa Rica spring break type tourism. That'll totally ruin it. Oh, and this should explain a lot. When you're hanging around Lake Atitlan, you're at least an hour away from the nearest McDonald's, Kentucky Fried, Burger King, or any U.S. fast food chain. That should help paint the picture for you. By the way, everyone who comes to one of my Expat Insider seminars gets a chance to take the John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. I always recommend them and sometimes tag along myself because they're 4-day boots-on-the-ground excursions through the towns of Lake Atitlan. By the way, if you're coming down to check out the lake on your own, believe me, you won't see 1/10 of it. There are so many hidden gems and diamonds in the rough that even people living nearby don't even know about. And you know, I've seen many low-budget, even backpacker gringos say, I'm going to do it by myself. I don't need a tour guide. I don't need any help. I'll explore on my own. Hey, and I say if you got a lot of time on your hands, go for it. But most gringos I know who do it on their own missed most of the best parts. At first, they do like everyone else. They land at the main city. That would be the base city called Panajachel, the first little town on the lake. Now, to get an idea how to get there by car or bus, you all know about the Pan American Highway that goes from Alaska to Panama City, Panama. After coming south through the states, it goes through a few major cities in Mexico and through almost all the major cities in Central America. It's the main transportation artery in the whole region. This little town of Panajachel is a 1 hour's drive from the Pan American Highway and a pretty decent road, too. But please don't try it at night. Again, you'll know exactly why if you get boots on the ground here. Enough said about that. So everyone that's going to the lake always ends up at that very first town called Panajachel. And I always suggest you make that your base camp. Book a hotel there for a couple of days, and every morning, take a boat around the lake to a different town. Then when it's just about dark, take a boat back to that little town and your hotel. But you see, most people don't do that. They just come in for a day or two and never get out of that little town. Problem is, you see, that little laid-back town is where all the gringo backpacker-style tourists end up. Mostly people just popping in as day trippers. Sure, you'll have a good time there, and you'll get to see some fabulous views. Well, that's all right for a day or two, but you have to get out of that little town. If you just visit that place and never visit the other small towns around the lake, there's a dozen of them, you'll be missing the best part of the whole lake experience. Oh, and about 8 of those towns you can only get to by taking the boat. By the way, it costs around $2 or $3 to hop on a boat and hit any one of those little towns. Each of those boats holds 20 people or more, and that's a real fun experience too. Anyway, the point is, 90% of the people that come to Panajachel to see the lake never get past that first little town, which is no great shakes. So, how to explain it? Well, it's kind of a lost-in-time, hippie, tree-hugging, backpacking tourist town in low gear. And the tourists, mostly laid-back, low-budget Europeans. And because it's the first stop off the Pan-American Highway, it is kind of a mini-tourist trap. Which is why I occasionally run into a gringo or a gringo couple, or I'll see a blog on the internet and say, yeah, I was at Panajachel, the lake's fabulous, but Panajachel is nothing, I don't see what the hubbub's about. Then you find out they never took a boat around the lake to check out any of the other 12 towns. And to give you an idea, the size of those towns ranges anywhere from 500 people to around 10,000, each with its own different indigenous population and indigenous arts and crafts, too. Again, it's all about getting boots on the ground, the right kind of boots on the ground. So the point of this little exercise is talking about real estate. Wow, you're thinking, where'd that come from? Well, listen up. Suppose you wanted to live, buy, rent, or build in an area that the experts call the most beautiful lake in the world. Or perhaps second most beautiful if you're listening to a reviewer who's of Italian descent. Now, we've all heard that overused term, million-dollar view. Well, forget about that. We're talking $100 million views here. That said, what do you think you'd have to pay for land, housing, even rent, situated around Lake Atitlan? We're talking about unobstructed views of the lake and the volcanoes and such, with close access to a main road and within 5 or 10 minutes of one of those small towns where they'll always have those fantastic food markets and basic shopping. By the way, they've got those annoying tuk-tuks in most of those towns. Cost you around $1 or $2 to take a trip around that town or down the back mountain roads to the next town. Okay, that's the setup. But the question is, based on what you know about real estate up in the first world, what do you think you'd have to pay for land, housing, or rent around the most spectacular lake in your own state? Well, you think about that for a while I read this email from longtime listener Shannon. He says, hi, Johnny. Let me start by offering my appreciation for the work on your show. I've been a listener for 3 years now and loving it. I really appreciate the information and your sense of humor and irony. Nice he put it that way. Like my mother used to say, that's a kind way of calling someone a wise ass. Anyway, he says, I'm in the middle of my third trip to Guatemala, and I found your show invaluable in preparing me for my first couple of stays in Guati. It was almost like I had already been there, thanks to your show. You also helped me avoid the very tempting pitfalls of places like Costa Rica. Well, I'm here at beautiful Lake Atitlan in the little town of San Juan La Laguna, and I'm getting ready to jump in and start swimming. In fact, I found a nice fixer-upper house near a youth hostel called Mayacek. At a $20,000, that's $20,000 opening offer, it seems like I could hardly go wrong. Did you hear that? $20,000. Now the bargaining starts. I know there's always some tricks in the real estate biz, and I don't want to get screwed. So, Johnny, I was wondering if I could get a suggestion on a lawyer or to give me some help on checking out this property. Basically, he said, I'm looking to avoid mistakes. I know you advocate renting first, but I see huge business potential in this house. I can elaborate if necessary in another email. Anyway, I see opportunity here, and any help would be appreciated. Thanks for your show and consideration. Shannon. So anyway, I got that little email just recently, and yes, I referred him to a trusting, honorable attorney. He'll be the one to check out the deeds, the paperwork, and how it's registered at the municipality. One thing everyone has to know is that there's no title insurance in Latin America. That's not an option down here. That also means there are no title companies to hire to check out a piece of property to see if it's registered properly, if there is a lien against it, etc. Because, you know, people will always tell you there's a clear title when they're trying to sell you a piece of property, right? Which is why you absolutely have to get a lawyer to check that stuff out. So what he'll do is go down to the local municipality and property registry, pull all the paperwork and the maps, check into the property taxes. By the way, here in Latin America, the property tax divisions are known by the letters USI or USI. Anyway, it's not something that you or I could check out with 100% certainty at all. Even if your Spanish is perfect, there's almost no way for a layperson to do that. What I mean is if you think legalese in English is a pain in the ass, you ain't seen nothing until you've seen it in Spanish. And remember, the American legal system is based on British common law and the Spanish legal system on Napoleonic law, further complicating things. So anyway, our email writer, Shannon, has found himself what he calls a fixer-upper on the most beautiful lake in the world, or second most beautiful, with a starting bid of $20,000. By the way, I know of a few other gringos who have bought into such deals on that lake. Now, of course, I haven't seen the place, but I know there are great deals to be had, but you have to get boots on the ground. You won't find deals like that on the internet, because you know then you're dealing with one or more middlemen, gringos who've translated everything to English. You know the story. So how do you find those deals? Well, of course, you come down, get boots on the ground, do some exploring and poking around yourself. However, your best option by far is to hook up with a bilingual local person. And I'm not talking about a Latin or gringo person advertising themselves as a realtor. In fact, one guy who came down to one of my Expat Insider seminars some 4 or 5 years ago now, formerly he was a very successful real estate man in the States who got pretty much wiped out in the 2008 real estate bubble blowout. And after living in Central America for 4 years now, specifically in Antigua, Guatemala, he wrote me a little note not long ago explaining the real estate situation in Antigua, Lake Atitlan, and some general tips that gringos should really pay attention to, but often don't, when looking to rent or buy here in Latin America. Now, he came down to Latin America to retire. He is not involved in real estate, but he watches the real estate game very closely, and here's his thoughts on it. He writes, Johnny, as far as gringos and expats coming down looking for real estate, first thing they'll do is they'll run into gringos, especially in gringoized area and semi-gringoized areas, and they'll get recommendations from the clueless expat community. What I mean is regarding real estate, they really are clueless, especially the ones that hang with other gringos exclusively and don't speak much Spanish. I'd say most of the people that call themselves realtors, both Latins and gringos, are not good. Once you've been down a while, you will start hearing stories that'll curl your toes. My own personal experiences with realtors in Latin America are not good either. And you'll find if you're in a gringoized area or there's some turnover of tourists that tends to obscure unsavory gringo real estate happenings in the past. In other words, people leave, especially the ones who've had bad real estate experiences, as well as the fact that the memory of incompetent realtor dickheads, even the crooks, fades after a while. Still, some clueless expats will recommend the same real estate idiots, perhaps because they're drinking buddies or they're the only game in town. Like I said, as time goes by, people leave, lose track, or just forget about bad experiences, which is human nature and how we move forward. Which is why you're almost always better off hooking up with a local, bilingual, motivated, somewhat educated person. In this area, the concierge ladies that Johnny talks about and who he has vetted fit that bill nicely. That way you'll be able to write down your wish lists, whether you want to purchase, rent, the amount you want to spend, the view you want to have, just list your preferences. Do you want peaceful or busy? Just have that bilingual person that you contracted pursue the so-called real estate offices and bulletin boards for you. Skype with them a bit. Have them do the legwork ahead of time, looking for low, medium, high-quality real estate, whatever you want. Let them pick through the signs, the postings, and the news ads. Let them gather up some photos of those places and contact the owners well before you're ready to go on the hunt. In every town, there are some top and bottom end people and sometimes even expats that know where the good buys are. Though it's pretty much a given that only a local will know whether a price is astronomical for the area or dirt cheap and how much one can push the envelope. After all, gringo prices come along with tall white English speakers, not short dark locals. So getting someone else to do the legwork beforehand and to have some nice offerings picked out makes a big difference. No one that first moves into an area can do it all by themselves and still get the great deals. Most gringos don't know what a Latin American real estate agent is or does, not knowing that often having no realtor at all is better than using one. First of all, it takes no license at all down here to be a realtor. No tests, no training, no exam, therefore no ethics either. Most importantly, there's no such thing as exclusivity. You know how up in the States you can sign an exclusive with a realtor and no one else can get a piece of it. However, down here in Latin America, there aren't no listings that belong to just one realtor. Even if you sign what you think is an exclusive contract with a certain realtor, it's not binding. It's business down here in a way of life to go behind one realtor's back and buy up a property directly from the owner. Bottom line, realtors here in Latin America are not really your personal representatives at all. They normally represent both sides, which means there are neither side and all for themselves. So by all means, use realtors to show you properties, but don't limit yourself. Never just strictly go through a realtor. Best idea of all, hire a bilingual local to do your legwork for you. Okay, that was a little blurb from a very successful U.S. realtor who came down here to live and observed the unconventional and unprofessional goings-on in the local Latin real estate biz. Good stuff to keep in mind. Okay, moving on. I still get emails occasionally asking me about chemtrails and different oddities up in the sky. I don't doubt they exist up in the States, not at all. But down here in Latin America, I've yet to see any trace of chemtrails. Though people have sent me some very convincing photos of chemtrails over Mexico City. But somehow I never seem to get emails about chemtrails from the younger crowd because they're not looking up at the sky. They're looking down at their stupid cell phones and texting and Facebooking their latest bowel movements to their 5,000 virtual pseudo-friends. Though things might be getting better. Remember just a few years ago when people measured their social importance by how many Facebook friends they had? I take that as a signal that the herd definitely needs to be culled. Starting with Zuckerberg, Soros, Hillary, Gates, but I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, chemtrails in Latin America. You know, to me, one of the few pleasures in life that's free is just looking up at the sky. Not to mention, how about a nice big breath of fresh air? Free for now, anyway, huh? How about a good sneeze? Now, that's an underrated free pleasure, except maybe for the sneezee. How about a good read from an old book? And of course, we have to mention those normally unmentionable bodily functions that, well, also can be included on that list. Enough said about that. Oh yeah, and used to be a nice, fresh, cool, pure glass of water was on that list too, but clean water is not free anymore, is it? I know, we've all got our own additions to that list, but for sure, just looking up at the sky during the day or the night is one of those pleasures. It really seems to be a lost art. Which brings me to this email. He says, Johnny, in case you're having a brain fart and ever thought about coming back to the U.S., take a look at these pictures I'm sending from Scottsdale, Arizona, from the Waste Management Golf Open. What? A Waste Management Golf Tournament? What'll they think of next? So, do you tee off a dumpster or something? Anyway, he says, boy, was there a lot of shade, Johnny, in what would have been a normally clear sunny day. He's talking about chemtrails there. He says, I've been meaning to ask you if they have chemtrail events there in Latin America, because they're getting worse every year up here, reducing our clear sunny days in a year to practically nothing. Nos vemos, Johnny. Jason. So with that, he sent some very convincing chemtrail photos from Scottsdale. And if you're looking at the YouTube right now, you'll be seeing them. Anyway, Jason, I commend you for looking up into the sky once in a while, even if it was not, in this case, one of those few free pleasures in life. By the way, how many can you list? Have you ever thought about it? All right, moving on. Remember last time we spoke about the Argentine government talking about building a wall, like the Trump wall, to keep out those illegal Bolivians. You know that's getting like zero press up in the first world, I hear. Speaking of press, every single newspaper, blog, and TV station has endless coverage about Trump. They're always beating on him, of course. Everyone hates him. People are protesting everywhere. Narcos and even regular people are talking about bumping him off. I've never seen anything like it. Yet, funny enough, you never see any upper middle class or wealthy Latins dissing Trump or getting out on the street with signs. It's all the uneducated and undereducated masses doing all the squawking. By the way, did you know the average educational level of an illegal immigrant in the U.S. is 6th grade? Yep, just the kind of talent you want flooding into your country, right? But I digress as usual. Anyway, the Argentines apparently are in the same mess, but no one's talking about it. Not up in the first world, anyway. The news today is, according to Argentine Secretary Minister Patricia Bullrich, the vast majority of immigrants in Argentina are from Bolivia. And here's the startling fact. According to Argentine's own government data, they've discovered that 71% of all the Bolivians living in Argentina are there illegally without proper documentation. And get this, a spokesman for the Argentine Senate says, in the case of our country, Argentina, we don't need any more laws. Practically our entire penal code, without changes, is sufficient cause for deportation of all these people. However, he said, our government has been extremely lax in our expulsion process. Yes, he says, we have all the means necessary, but we're just not enforcing the law. Now that sounds way too familiar, huh? Okay, shooting off on another tangent here. I like doing that. We were talking about expats and gringos doing business in Latin America, and here's some statistics that just might shock you. Not in a bad way, but just to kind of give you a better feel of how business is done on the street here in Latin America. According to the Central American Business Data Network, now get this because it speaks volumes, 6 out of 10 establishments with economic activities, that means businesses, operate out of homes. That's 3/5 of all the so-called legitimate business activity being done out of someone's home, meaning in a general sense, people live in their houses and the front area facing towards the street is some kind of business, whether it's shoe repair, mechanic shop, stationery store, bakery. That's how the majority of business is done here in Latin America. It's a throwback to the 1930s, 40s, and 50s in the States when many, many residential homes had a front space where business was done. Of course, nowadays, zoning laws would never allow that up in the States. On rare occasions, the only businesses that can get away with it are dentists and physician and professional offices like accountants. But there's more. The study says 2 out of 10 businesses in Latin America, that's 1 out of 5, are located in commercial and business districts. That is, they're not attached to a home. Then it goes on to say 1 out of every 10 businesses operating on the books is located in a mall or shopping center. And overshadowing all of this is the fact that 30 to 40% of all business activity in Latin America is done off the books for cash, no receipts, right out in the open in big, chaotic street markets. So all you gonna-bes and wannabes and newbie expats thinking about coming down to Latin America and opening a brick-and-mortar business, those are the stats, that's what you'll be dealing with. But what other info can we glean from that? Well, when you read between the lines, once again, you can see there's a huge lag time effect in the way businesses are organized in the economic sector. And it's not hard to figure out why it's so much easier to do business in Latin America. The fact is, if you could just clear out your living room and start doing business right out of your house in practically any neighborhood, you can bet, as long as you pay your taxes anyway, that the government's just going to leave you alone. just like the U.S. government kept their noses out of small business back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. You get the idea. And finally, we have this from Richard. News about Latin America they never report in the first world. The article starts, as police go on strike in Brazil, cities there are being wiped out in, quote, purge fashion. I'll paraphrase this a bit. It says, police in Brazil have gone on strike, leaving the country unarmed and left in a purge-like chaos, as in the 2014 thriller Purge, with people running rampant with guns and machetes, stealing from malls, even dead bodies showing up lying in the streets. Buses are set aflame at night as people are crawling their way to shelter, covered in blood. School has been canceled, and according to this report, the death toll related to the strike is now at 72, with over 80 car hijackings a day. Now, the strike is all about a salary increase, and the police won't return to the job till they get it. Meanwhile, the majority of Brazilian citizens say they won't be leaving their houses anytime soon. With one resident in Espírito Santo saying in a phone interview, it's a effing mess what's going on here. And the worst part is that regular citizens are not allowed to have guns, so they can't defend themselves. Meanwhile, says the article, neither the U.S. media or any other country media has commented on the developing chaos spreading through Brazil. Now, according to the article, there are two police forces in Brazil, the local city police force and the national militarized cops, and they're the ones on strike. So there you have it, reason 2736, why Brazil should not be high on the list for your Plan B destination. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now, and I'd like to remind everyone who's interested in coming to my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar, it'll be in and around Guatemala again. To get on the early bird list, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. I should have all the information in detail up on the newexpat.com website by March 1st, a little more than 2 weeks from now. In the meantime, as long as you're up there in Seattle, Cleveland, Milwaukee, or wherever at the home front, don't forget you could further advance your Plan B by just going to expatplanb.com and signing up for my Expat Essentials course. Are you thinking about a Plan B or even sometime in the future contemplating voting with your feet? Well, my Expat Essentials course will help you line your ducks up in a very orderly, logical way. So don't forget, go to expatplanb.com and check it out.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.